Donalana Kitchen talks about food. Donalana Kitchen talks recipes. Donalana Kitchen talks about lots of other things on
Community Radio.
Welcome to the Donalana Kitchen. My name is Lana Noctigal.
And I'm Donna Prisgintas.
We get together here at this fine community radio station once a week, Tuesday at noon, live. Yes, we are live here in the fine studios of KHOI Community Radio. And we talk about food. Farming, recipes, advice, opinions.
Yes, and we're going to do food today. We've been getting a little political, but now food is coming back. It's coming into backyards. It's coming into gardens. It's coming to the farmers market this weekend. So we are going to be talking about food.
One of our favorite subjects. Yes, it is. And another favorite subject of ours is community radio. We want to take a minute here to mention that we want to thank you for your support of this radio station. KHOI is community radio. It is not owned by anybody except us. Us, yes, believe it or not.
The big us.
The big us, community radio. It gets by with help from donations and support and the energy of people like you out there.
So we have an update on our most recent fund drive. We have reached the magical number of $8,450, and Ursula, our station manager, has told us today we just need to hit $500 more, and we will reach a magical number of
$9,000.
Well, then we should have $550 for doing the math here.
Right.
Anyway, ka-ching. The fund drive is still going on, and today's goal is $550.
Yes, it is, and thank you for thinking of us. If you haven't done anything about that, do it now. You'll feel so much better for having done it. It's time to put your money where your ears are. You can go to khoifm.org. That is the website, and there is a magic donate button there. Or call 515-292-2878. Thanks for your support. So, yesterday was May Day. It was International Workers' Day.
It's May.
Yeah.
The last month of May.
You've been waiting all year
to
do that.
That's one of my favorite songs. I've been waiting all year for that.
Oh, good. And it's International Workers' Day. Around the world, not so much here, believe it or not, around the world, unions are celebrated and workers are celebrated and people get out on the streets and kind of
ruffle their
feathers.
Yeah, as if we don't work every day.
Right. It's kind of like Mother's Day, won't you think?
Oh, yeah. Right.
Oh, but anyway, International Workers' Day. Here's a shout out and a nod to all of us
who work.
Let's think about minimum wage. Let's think about $15 an hour for, especially, kind of connected with this show, what about all those food workers out there? Yes, everyone deserves a good, fair wage.
Yeah, and the food workers are often at the bottom of the pile on the wage issues.
Why is that? It's hard work to do things like that, to make the food, to serve the food.
And because it was originally women's work.
Right. And also it was kind of, you know, people used to have servants. I think we kind of want to believe that if we go out to eat, we have servants. No, those are people just like us. They've got kids to send to school and taxes to pay and rent to meet. So it's important.
Well, when I was a waitress in my younger days,
and
I worked for this, my favorite restaurateur of all times, Mark Schlossberg, who's no longer with us, but he used to say, to serve is to rule.
Oh, that's good. And
yes.
What did he say that?
I think to encourage us servers, because in a restaurant and in any situation where people are serving, the people they are serving could not function without those doing the service, so as it were.
That is a good thought for the day after International Workers' Day. Fair pay and justice for all, everybody. Yes. Oh, and speaking of working hard, here's a salute and a toast to the, believe it or not, the Cassini space probe that is out there in space And kind of like the Energizer Bunny, it just keeps on going and going. And isn't that amazing?
How long is it supposed to go?
Well, it was set up like 20, 25 sort of years ago, 22 years ago, I think. Something. Isn't that amazing? I mean, and it's just chugging along and chugging along. It's coming to the end of its life, but it is going around and around Saturn. And I don't know how they can make it go where it's going to go, but it dove in between the rings of Saturn and the surface of Saturn, and it's still sending back pictures. So International Workers' Day and Galactical Workers' Day, here it's a...
That's our best tin can technology.
Very good, very good. See, we can do good things. I think it's nice that we send things out.
Are we going to get into the issues of space debris now?
Oh, we might get cards and letters from the people on Saturn.
It's a big deal. Apparently, not only have we trashed the Earth, trashed the oceans, we're now leaving debris in space.
Uh-oh. Well,
no man has dared to go before. Pick up your litter, folks, right?
Very good. Oh, we've touched on a lot of subjects. There we go. Ha! Oh, this weekend, we had a rainy weekend. And Donna and I took a road trip. We took a road trip to Adel, Iowa, and went to Harvey's Nursery.
A pretty little town. They have an impressive county courthouse there.
And a lovely square.
Yeah, and it's a city of bricks. Some brick streets, lots of brick buildings. It's still charming.
Yes. And on the outside of this little town, there's a place called Harvey's Nursery and Greenhouse. It's been there a long time. And if you can't find a certain plant, maybe just Harvey's has it. We went because I heard this rumor. They had geraniums. Geraniums.
Scented geraniums.
Not just plain old
geraniums. Very special geraniums.
Lots of scented
and
geraniums.
And indeed they did. They must have 50 varieties.
Yes, yes. So Donna and I sort of overloaded.
We sniffed our way
through
the whole thing.
Oh, we did. And there were kinds that were just, and of course we had to bring home a few. We'll be talking about more
scented
geraniums.
Although, Lana, in retrospect, I have to say, that the variety that you have been growing for the past, five or six or more years,
right,
is still my favorite.
I got that one from a greenhouse here in Ames, Ames Greenhouse and Floral, south of Ames. But things are changing all the time.
In terms of cooking, and we don't even know the variety name on that one.
No,
something
no.
Rose. It's one of the roses.
Yeah, here at Harvey's Greenhouse, they must have had 5 or 10 different kinds. There was adder rose. There was strawberry rose.
Well, I bought the adder rose.
I
got a lemon one. What did you end up getting?
I ended up getting something called a fresh apple scent. And yes, it does. There was nutmeg. There was cinnamon. There was pine.
Be forewarned, because you will see these around Ames. There's one called the mosquito citronella one, which has a very, very strong, I like the odor of it, but don't cook with it, okay?
Be careful.
It doesn't taste very good. It smells great. The mosquitoes don't like it. It's lovely in the garden, but don't cook with it.
Be forewarned. We had a wonderful time. I came out of there with my nose just tingling. They also had a large variety of herbs. And, of course, you just have to go through and sniff.
Oh, right. And the one thing Lana and I both went there for was lemon verbena plants.
They do have them. They're healthy.
Yes,
they're good.
They're beautiful.
We got a lemon verbena plant. And I found, I have no idea unless you go and look. There are lots of different kinds of oreganos. And I got an oregano called Cuban oregano. It is a big, a bigger leaf, a kind of a succulent leaf, and it has an amazing, I'll plant that, I'll watch it grow, and I'll talk about that later.
I mean, in my spice drawer, I do have both Turkish oregano and Mexican oregano, and they are, you can differentiate between them.
Isn't it nice to know there are such variety in this world. I'll talk more about that.
We did get French tarragon, but we are on the hunt for Russian tarragon.
If any of you out there knows where we can get Russian tarragon, maybe we have to go through the Trump White House. I don't know. But if you know where we can get some Russian tarragon.
We could call it Georgian tarragon. We're looking for it because our friend Gio is Georgian, and in Georgia they cook with lots of this tarragon. So we are not able to have authentically Georgian cuisine without it. So we are trying to find some Russian tarragon to grow in large quantities.
Yes. So here's an email where you can contact us. khoiradio@gmail.com and write Donalana Kitchen or DLK in the headline so we kind of know what's going on. I'm sure there's some out there.
And FYI, Mexican tarragon is not Russian tarragon.
French tarragon.
No, there's Mexican
and French.
Those two I know. Uh-huh. The Mexican one has a much bigger leaf than the French one. And the flavor, you know, they're related. You can tell that. But it's not as delicate as the French one.
Isn't that nice? There's so much out there. And it's spring. We have lots to learn, lots to explore. So we've had a few days of very cool, cold weather. Brr. But here comes spring. Donna, talk about asparagus.
Oh, yes. This is why we decided it's time to start talking about food again, because right now we're getting asparagus, rhubarb, spring onions, something else.
Oh, radishes.
Radishes. Yes,
radishes. Be coming. But Donna kind of, she does.
I went on an asparagus bender.
She does this. She disappears with armfuls of things into her kitchen. Well, what did you find out?
First of all, I found out that the asparagus at the Hy-Vee, which comes from State Center, which is only 25 miles west of us, is really, really good. It's the best asparagus I've found in town. Mm-hmm. I highly recommend it because it must just be that it's fresher and it hasn't traveled so far. Because you know how when you get asparagus and you're supposed to bend it till it breaks, so you take the woody part off of the ends and all of that? The asparagus from State Center, which is our own Iowa asparagus, is barely woody at all. So almost all that you buy is really edible and delicious. Very, very, very good.
Very good.
So I loaded up on the asparagus. I did several things. The most ambitious one is I thought, oh, let's have an asparagus tureen. Now, doesn't that sound divine?
Oh, it sounds just like you, I must say.
An asparagus tureen. So it's a little bit of work to construct a tureen. And then I had Joe and Lana over and we unveiled it. And the flavors were good, but the structure collapsed.
Explain a tureen. It's kind of like a meatloaf, but it's not a meatloaf.
Well, you put it in a pan, a loaf pan of some sort. Now, there are lots of kinds of tureens, and a meatloaf really is almost the same as a pâté. The difference is that when they're making a pâté, they actually put a heavy weight on the top and press it down. That's part of the difference. But tureens are something that is loaf-shaped that typically you unmold and serve at the table and then slice it. So there's vegetable tureens, there's meat tureens, there's fish tureens. And the different things used to make loaves are, for example, some of them, there are vegetable tureens where the base is egg. And you mix it all up and you put it in a little pan, the tureen pan, and then you bake it in a hot water bath in the oven. There's the one I was using really is a gelatin tureen. Mm-hmm. So I had some really good fresh chicken stock that already was gelled a little bit because I'd boiled the bones in it, which meant when I added more gelatin to the stock, I had to guess how much gelatin to put in. Now, I didn't want it to turn into rubber, so I think I was... And this is, you're just going to have to guess because you don't know, except by looking at your chicken stock, you really cannot measure how much gelatin is in there. So I took a couple cups of chicken stock. I added lemon juice, lemon zest, and heated them up with, I probably added another tablespoon maybe. How much ever gelatin powder added, it was not quite enough. But... And then the second thing that I did, and we will digress for a moment and talk about the preparation of asparagus in general. The usual method is to steam, right?
To steam asparagus, yes.
That's what people normally do. And not too long. You know, you don't really want it soggy. So I must say, maybe it's just Midwestern or maybe it's just American, but we like our asparagus with a little snap to it still, you know.
I think we're
not
learning.
Limp,
yeah, I think we're
learning.
Yeah.
This limp asparagus stuff,
yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
Anyway, so I prefer to broil it.
Ah.
So what I do is I take a sheet pan and I just lay the asparagus out in a single layer. And then I put a little either spray olive oil. In this instance, I actually had the chicken fat from the stock. So I kind of rolled it in that, a little salt and pepper. And then what you do is you put your oven on a high broil. And once it gets really hot, then you stick the pan under the broiler, you know, maybe 3 to 4 inches down, close.
Oh,
up
close
on
yeah.
the top shelf, right? And you don't cook it very long. Joe had asked me how long I cooked it. You know, I don't really know. I 2 minutes maybe? Less time than you think, because if you're broiling it, the point of broiling any roasting or broiling vegetables is you actually concentrate the flavor of the vegetable. Why a roasted beet, for example, tastes slightly sweeter and a little more deeper in the flavor profile than a boiled beet. So it's the same thing with asparagus. However, if you're steaming asparagus, then the usual thing is to blanch it in cold water right afterwards so that it stays crisp and you stop the cooking that way. So if you're broiling, you don't want to do that because then you're going to, once you put it in the water, you lose the reason that you're broiling it for. You just don't want to put it in water. So broiling the asparagus is a way of cooking it without water. So you very judiciously control the temperature of the oven because you know it's going to go on cooking. Usually after a couple of minutes, I sneak a tiny little piece out to see if it's just beginning to cook. And then what I do to cool it is I pull it out and I quickly just throw the pan so that all the asparagus rolls off onto the countertop.
Oh, and you must be good. Mine would end up on the floor, but I'm sure you can do
that.
No, okay.
You can do that.
Okay.
And then, you know, because you've cleared your countertop because you want them all not to be piled on top of each other. Then, you know, you put the pan down and you quickly take your hands and just kind of spread them all out so they have enough room for the heat to dissipate as quickly as possible. So that means you're slightly undercooking them in the oven because they will go on cooking. So anyway, that's how I cook asparagus. And then if I'm being really simple with the preparation, once they've cooled, I just add if they need a little more salt, but I often will do a little lemon zest on top of them and maybe a little lemon, but not much. You know, you don't want to just cover that flavor. It's pretty subtle. So anyway, grilling is a whole nother thing, but same principle as broiling, fast and hot. So I made the terrine with the broiled asparagus. So I lined them all up in the little pan. I cut them the length of the pan. I poured on the boiling, just under a boil, the gelatin, chicken broth, lemon mixture, and then I set it in the refrigerator.
Oh, was there anything else you added to the...
Oh, yeah, right, okay. At the moment, we have a very unusual thing going on in Ames. One of our farmers who grows at Farm to Folk, who will be at the farmer's market on Saturday, and I am hoping he will appear with this, my favorite herb, or at least one of my very favorite herbs, chervil. Now, we don't get it very often. It's a little fluffy little thing. It's like miniature flat leaf parsley, yeah. But it's a little fluffier. It's not like cilantro. It's not quite like tarragon.
I've had it. I've heard it called sort of an anise flavor.
I've heard it called that
deeper.
Too, but I don't think that's fair.
But it
doesn't anise me. You know?
Well,
I just
excuse
don't.
Me.
No, I People do say that all the time, and maybe it's in the Annis family. I don't really know, but I don't find that it goes that way.
It's a wonderful taste.
It's darling, and it's from Lee's Greens, and he will hopefully have it at the farmer's market. So, folks, if you see it, do grab a bag and experiment with it. It's very good with Indian food. It's very good with French food. It's very good with American food. So I put some chervil into my tureen. So Joe and Lana come over. We get the tureen out. We unmold the tureen. We flip it onto the plate. We put the knife in it, and the whole thing collapses. It tasted fine, but it was
lovely.
Yeah, it did. Do tell, Lana, what was your impression of the tureen?
Well, it held together just fine until you started to try to cut through that, because here's all these wonderful cooked asparagus in. They're kind of stacked up like cordwood, all held together.
Exactly, because the point is when you cut into the tureen, you get the little polka dots of the end pieces. So it's supposed to be kind of charming, like polka-dotted asparagus tureen or something. But the gelatin was not strong enough, and the asparagus should not have been so crisp for the tureen. Okay.
So balance and all. However,
it was an experiment.
However, here was this lovely stuff.
It tasted good.
Yeah, this lovely semi-clear gelatin, and you serve it cool.
Oh, yeah, right out of the fridge. Yeah,
yeah. And it fresh, tasted like spring.
Yeah. So I may try it again later. At the moment, I was like a little daunted by the whole process. However, I did have another success with asparagus, which we are about to unveil. Dum da dum, da dum da dum. Ready?
Ready.
Here it comes. Lana, here is one. This is a pickled asparagus. Evan, do tell us what you think. So I'll tell you how I did it. This one, you stuff the asparagus into the jar raw, right?
Oh.
But then you take this is a refrigerator pickle. Lana's chewing. See, they're still a little crispy.
Crisp.
Although the recipe promised they would be green. These are not green.
Well,
I don't know.
They've been sitting in vinegar green.
Well, yeah, but it said they should be bright. So the recipe.
It's not easy to be green. No.
Oh. Well, what do you think about the taste?
It's very good. I love pickles, and I'm surprised that they're as crispy as they are.
Well, because you don't cook them.
Mm-hmm.
So the recipe basically that I used was, you stuff the asparagus into the jar with the fibrous parts trimmed off, da-da-da-da-da. But fortunately, our local asparagus did not have a lot of fibrous parts. And then in a pan, you mix together a cup of water, a half a cup of sugar, and a cup and a half of white wine vinegar, 2 tablespoons of salt, 2 large cloves of garlic sliced thinly. This is the part I liked. A tablespoon of fennel seeds. No, 2 tablespoons of fennel seeds and 2 tablespoons of yellow mustard. Okay, that was the recipe. Now, here's what I really did, okay? Okay, I changed the vinegar to malt vinegar because that's what I had. That's an English vinegar. And I also added pepper, black pepper, and something hot. I can't remember what. It wasn't cayenne. Maybe it was pepper flakes or something. I wanted a little more heat in it. But the trick with this refrigerator pickle is to boil all the herbs in the pickling sauce. Mm-hmm. You don't just heat it up. You really, because you want the flavors of the mustard and the garlic and the fennel to go into the vinegar. Because as you can see from looking at this jar, the seeds are kind of sitting on the bottom. So,
well, and they're hard little self-contained things. Probably boiling wakes them up a little bit.
You know what I'm thinking I might do with the vinegar and the mustard seeds? Mm-hmm. I have to make a potato salad tomorrow. I was thinking of using the mustard for the potato salad dressing and the seeds into the potato salad.
What a good idea.
There's such a lovely little collection of seeds in here. But I like the combination of the mustard and the fennel seeds. I do like about this recipe.
That is a nice thing to put with asparagus.
For the next batch, you want to hear how I really might change
it? Go ahead.
And you tell me what you think. I think they have a little too much sugar. Do you think they're too sweet? I would reduce the sugar, maybe by 30%, and I might change the vinegar to water ratio and make them a little more water and a little less vinegar. I don't like my pickles that sour, that vinegar. You know,
they dominate, don't you think? Assertive.
Yeah, but when we opened the jar, I have to tell you, the whole studio smelled like garlic. What do you think, Evan, of this pickled asparagus?
Oh, I think it's quite delicious. The malt vinegar especially is a different take on it, and
might be good with beer, huh, Evan?
Oh, I would definitely say so. It'd be a perfect little side plate when you're having like a red ale or something like that. I think it would pair quite nicely.
I can't tell you how easy it is. I'm definitely, unlike the tureen, which was like a construction, this is zippity-doo-dah. I definitely will make it again.
Very good. Mm-hmm. So there's two ideas. You see all that good asparagus out there? Do eat it. Just broil it, roast it, pan fry it.
Chop it up and throw it in the salad raw.
Eat it. But here are two wonderful ideas. Think of it as a tureen. And also think of it as a pickle. What a good thing to do. You just may end up really liking asparagus. You're listening to KHOI 89.1. This is the Donalana Kitchen. You can contact us by Gmail. And again, if you have any insights into Russian tarragon, do. That's khoiradio@gmail.com.
Right, we're on the case for the Russian tarragon.
You bet, okay. All you listeners out there, and support this fine radio
station. If you got any connections at the CIA or the FBI, do let us know.
Oh, we'll find some. We know we will. Donalana Kitchen, this is Tasty Radio. Welcome back. This is the Donalana Kitchen. We've been talking about spring things. Aren't you hungry for asparagus right about now? And whenever I think of asparagus, that's one of those spring things. And mushrooms in Iowa, in central Iowa, are kind of like popping up like mushrooms this time of year.
Lana's got a good mushroom skill way over my head. I'm really interested.
I'm not the greatest mushroomer in the world.
Well, she's better than I am.
But I do look for morels, and yes, I have found a few. I'm not going to get rich hunting morel mushrooms, but I always do find enough for supper. It's always nice to it's a good way to get to know your local woods, whether you own it or whether it's a park, whether it's somebody else's woods. You kind of get to know where those old trees are, where the elms are, where there's a tree that kind of looks like it's kind of going south.
And I suppose this wet weather has been very good for them.
Well, they need moisture, and I think this little bit of sunshine now is going to help a lot.
Oh, do you think we'll have a pop of them
by the weekend? I believe so. I've been finding a lot of little ones, and I'm hoping for kind of like the mother load. So morel mushrooms, are relatively, they look like nothing else. And go with somebody who knows what they're doing. Once you find one, you pretty much will recognize it anytime.
So there's nothing bad that could be mistaken for a morel mushroom.
As I understand it, no. Now, I'm not
around here anyway.
Around here, you're right.
Yeah.
There really is not. Now, there's lots of other things, and there's lots of other things in the woods out there right now. I brought in some show and smell here. I know we can't really hold this up to the microphone, but I brought it in so Donna can see it. I was brave this year. I'm trying a new mushroom. They are around the woods, and again, find somebody who knows what they're doing to go out in the woods with you. I learned about this mushroom from my friend Adam Wilkie. He's a mushroom person. And a couple years ago, he was walking me through my woods, and he looked down and he said, look, that's a pheasant back mushroom.
Pheasant back mushroom.
I brought some in here, and it's quite ubiquitous here this season because I don't know. This must be
so
a good year for it.
So this is a spring-only mushroom?
No, actually, I think it pretty much grows all year, but you want to get them young. Young, because they get big and they get woody. They look like the pheasant back mushroom is found at the base of trees, on logs. They can grow from hand size to big platter size. I suppose you would describe them as a shelf sort of mushroom. They look sort of like
ear. So they kind of grow, stagger up the tree a little?
Stagger up the tree a little bit. They're easy to see because they're quite showy. They're speckledy.
Look like they have little feathers on them.
Yeah.
That's, I guess, why it's a pheasant.
Pheasant back.
Charming. Yeah.
And they're also called a hawk's wing mushroom.
You can see that.
Wikipedia.
And they're like a creamy, yellowy beige.
Mm-hmm. With speckles.
Yeah, but apparently the big ones are like rubber.
Well, yes. I haven't learned how to cook the big ones.
So what she's calling a little one is maybe 2.5 inches across.
Palm of your hand.
Three
palm
at
of
max.
Your hand.
Yeah.
Not including the fingers.
Right, and the bigger one is more like 6 inches, and apparently they become too chewy.
I found that. I mean, since my friend said, well, they're edible, give them a try, I also looked up on the internet. And what I did with the small ones is there's a hard little nubbin where it is attached to the tree. Cut that off so you end up with a little fan.
Oh, it's like a stem on the shiitake,
stem.
Which you don't eat either.
Slice it up. I dipped it in egg and sliced it up in little slices. Dipped it in egg, dipped it in cornmeal, and fried it for a long time. They took a bit more cooking than a morel, and They're okay. They're good. They're not as good as a morel, but as far as I know.
So what do they have, that mushroomy, woodsy flavor?
Woodsy, wonderful flavor. Uh-huh. I think I didn't really have enough.
Say the name of it again. Back of the peacock?
Close enough. Pheasant back.
Oh, sorry. Wrong bird. Oh, dear.
Okay.
Back. Okay.
So you can look that up. Pheasant back mushroom. They're also called hawk's wing mushroom.
Mm-hmm.
Or
I can see that.
A lot of some of the mushroom sources that I looked in call them dryad's saddle.
Oh. A dryad's saddle. Oh, I'll have some dryad's saddle on my steak tonight.
I think they look for central Iowa. Anyway, that's kind of my new mushroom that I'm kind of experimenting with. And yes, I'll eat the small ones. Yes, I will. And still still keep looking for those morels.
Now, these aren't ones that you have to cook them for them to be edible.
Yeah, I think you do. I don't know. I would cook them.
Okay, because some plants are not good for you if you don't cook them. So I have no idea.
Like I say,
we're not eating them raw. Anyway, she's only suggested just cooking them just because we don't know any better. So
right. Just to kind of pique your interest out there. So pheasant back mushrooms, they're out there. This is central Iowa. They're out there, folks. Another thing.
No peacocks, though.
No peacocks.
Okay.
Another sort of thing that I have been enjoying in the spring.
Oh, yes. The spring onions.
Yes. I have been growing for years little small bunches of something called a Welch onion. And believe it or not, I have got a little patch of onions that are about
And folks, remember, this is on Onion Creek Farm. We got a theme going on here. Well, although sometimes I think it's the tomato farm, but it's Onion Creek Farm.
It is. It is. These, believe it or not, are a perennial onion. Perennial onion.
Perennial anything. Throw it out, get it going, and forget about it. And it serves you forever.
Because it comes back from, if you leave one of these in the ground in the fall, it'll die back. But it will come back in a clump and produce more onions, more little, they're like large scallions. They're not bulby onions.
So it's not like the what's that called, the Egyptian walking onion that kind of falls over and then you find it in another place in the garden next year? This is different?
Yeah. Well, it comes back in bunches. And it is really, truly perennial. It stays green all year. You can use the little
In the winter?
If you mulch it, it would, yes. Huh. But my minos freeze out or I use them all up. And the tops of the onion are really, really nice because they're really fat and hollow.
And crunchy.
And crunchy.
Oh, they're really, it's just a giant scallion.
It's a giant scallion.
It's got a little heat.
It's recommended that you use them raw because they just have a wonderful taste. Or if you're going to cook them, don't cook them for a long time.
Well, like you would a scallion.
Right. It's a delicate thing.
You throw it on the top of a soup as a garnish at the very end, and the heat of it just resting there is sufficient. Or if you're going to put them in a sauté, you throw it in as the very last ingredient, and then it stays green, it adds color, and it's really good.
Good. The biennial name or the Latin name for this is Allium fistulosum, which is different from onions. Onions are Allium sepa. So who keeps track of all this? But it is. It's a slightly different variety. It comes from Asia. And I got
But it's called the Welsh onion.
I got interested in this a couple years ago out of a seed catalog. I saw Welsh onions. Oh, there you go. And because I am hopefully besotted by Welsh corgi dogs. I'm sorry. I admit. Oh, what a good thing. That must be good. It's Welsh.
Some Welsh onions for our Welsh corgi dog. Okay.
So I planted some. I planted, and they're slow growers. But now I've got a nice little stand of them. They're called Welsh onion. Comes from the old German word Welsh.
Oh, now you're going to tell me they're really German.
No, they're not. Welsh is a German word for foreign. And it came originally from the Middle East. So
this is an immigrant onion.
Right.
Okay.
And actually, they have been all over the world now. But they originally come from China and Japan. And so calling it the foreign onion or, the word barbaric can be added to some things, too. I mean, it's not from around here, so there it is. But that's what the Welsh comes from. But I like to think of them as Welsh.
Well, we're supporting immigrants.
Yeah, we are. And this is a
Especially in the garden.
A very good one. So, look up Welsh onions. I found a variety called the red Welsh onion. And in the spring, it isn't so much now, these winter springs that have come up. But there's a little red blush to the tiny bulb down below. And you can get regular white onions, but this is called a red Welsh onion. And you also can plant them from seed, but it takes a while. It does. So I'm planting more from seed this year because I realize...
Because Lana is a very patient person.
I'm a patient person. And these are little hardy things. I have, in my seed catalogs and in the things I've looked up, it suggests putting these lovely perennial green stalky plants in your flower garden because they're a lovely flower. They put up a lovely flower.
And the foliage would be this nice little spiky. Yep.
And you can eat it, and it's tough, and it lasts a long time, and they put
no,
up a lovely...
No, it's not tough when you eat it.
No.
It's tender when you eat it, but it's tough in that it keeps
pretty
going.
Much, pretty much
Hard to
just
kill,
takes care of itself.
Excellent.
So here is a shout-out and a good thing to say about Welsh onions.
And where would one find the Welsh onions?
Actually, they were kind of hard to find for a while, but you can go to any seed catalog and find Welsh onions.
Oh, they're popular now.
Yes, more and more. Okay. Johnny's seed catalog has it. There is a seed catalog called Pine Tree Nursery, which has lots of strange herbs and wonderful things. And
Pine Tree Nursery?
Pine Tree Nursery. And check with Seed Savers Exchange. I just bet.
I bet they'd have it,
back
too.
Back in there, somebody's little black back corner. Mm-hmm. Look for Welch onions. You're listening to KHOI 89.1. This is the Donna Lana Kitchen. We're back. This is the Donna Lana Kitchen. We've been celebrating good food today, talking about onions, mushrooms, and asparagus. And you've been listening to music by a band called Wild Asparagus. What else? Wild Asparagus is a wonderful dance band. They play contra dance music. And this CD that we're listening to is called Live at the Guiding Star Grange. And some of these cuts have got the hoops, hollers, and stompings and clappings of the dance floor in it. So if you hear people hollering during any of these cuts, well,
we're having a party.
That's how it's supposed to be. Wild Asparagus is a dance band. Yes, it is. And Donna gave us some good information about asparagus, and I've been talking a little bit about mushrooms and herbs and wild and Welch
spring onions.
Onions, yeah.
The other thing coming along now is radishes. I expect to see a lot of them at the farmer's market this weekend. And I'm just going to give a quick little, of course, everybody puts them in salads, but there are lots of other ways to use rabbit. Rabbits like radishes, too. But if you cut the radishes up, you can lightly sauté them. You can roast them. You can do all kinds of little things. Now, the French have a special way of eating the radishes. This is a whole course. It comes at the beginning of the meal. You get a little plate. And the way they trim the radish is they leave the very top, like, quarter inch of the stem on. You kind of scrape all the dirt around that hip out. And you cut the tail off. But you leave the first top quarter of it so it has a little handle.
Oh.
And then they serve it with a plate of fresh butter and salt. So you're supposed to take a little bit of butter, chilled butter, put it on the radish, and add a little bit of salt and eat it like that. That's a very common French way of eating. And that's the whole first course.
Now, I wouldn't have thought of putting butter
on radishes. I know. But you know what? I've actually grown quite fond of it.
Oh, very good. Let's look forward to that then.
Yeah. And you can keep a little crispy bread around, too. Oh. And then if you're into it, you could add some cheese. But that would not be traditional. The cheese would be at the end of the meal.
Okay.
But, you know, we're American. We can do what we want, right?
That's true. That's right. True. So, nobody's going to tell us what to do. Okay. Radishes with butter. I do like that. And salt.
Yes.
And like anything else, there are a lot of different varieties of radish. So taste your way around out there and kind of remember what the ones you really liked are.
Yeah, this would be particularly good with those French breakfast radishes.
Now, that is one of my favorites.
Those little kind of long, skinny ones that are pink and white. I love those, too.
Those tend to be a little bit milder than some of the real firecracker ones.
Well, there's no bad radishes, as far as I'm concerned.
Oh, that's very nice of you to say. There are no bad radishes. Oh, and speaking of butter.
Oh, I had another experiment. Okay, I found a recipe that I thought, this sounds good. It was called a compounded butter, which just means a flavored butter. But this was a coffee compounded butter.
Ooh.
And the recipe sounded really simple. You take 2 cups of cream and you coarsely grind 3/4 cup of coffee beans. Now that's a lot of coffee.
Oh.
But in the picture, the butter was quite dark. So I did it. You take the 2 cups of cream, you put the coffee grinds in, you let it sit overnight in the refrigerator, you strain off the coffee grounds, and then you whip it till it turns into butter. So, you know,
whip it with like a beater?
I just use my hand
beater.
Electric
beater.
Yeah. I mean, any, you know, I'm sorry. I don't have the patience to hand whisk it or shake it or whatever. But my biggest problem was, so watch out, don't grind the coffee too fine, because then I had a lot of trouble getting all of the bits of coffee out of the butter. Finally, I managed to do it. I had to reheat it. I had to, you know, it was a mess. But anyway, finally, I get the strained coffee cream. Then you add, like, I think a tablespoon of sugar for the 2 cups of cream. And then you just beat it and beat it until what happens, you know, when you hit the actual butter stage, the whey or the water starts to separate.
Oh.
And you just kind of pour that off. I drank the whey. The coffee whey was delicious, I must say. So don't waste it. And then the recipe said, which I did not do, it encourages you to wrap it in cheesecloth and then kind of twist it, because you'll get more liquid out of it.
Ah.
I actually had a butter paddle and I kind of beat it around a little bit. But
that's kind of less like this tureen idea. You kind of compress just a little bit, make it into a shape.
Well, so you had some for breakfast. What did you think?
I love coffee for breakfast anyway. And so here is your lovely brown butter to put on
your toast.
Oh, how
nice. What could
be
simpler?
Oh, how nice. I did have a piece of whole wheat toast, and I should have had something a bit more white bread, a little plainer.
I liked mine on the whole.
Oh, that's good.
For me, the main trick was to leave the butter out the night before, because it's better soft.
Yes, that's true. That's true.
You get more flavor out of it
at
room temperature.
Right. Yeah. And it tears up your
toast.
But
it's a really easy little project to do. And I packed it into a little, the smallest canning jar. I don't know. What are those? A half a cup or something like that?
What, a jelly jar?
Yeah, the little jelly jars.
Well, you can do 8 ounces or 6 ounces.
What was the one I did?
Six.
The smallest one.
Yeah,
okay.
Yeah.
And they make a really nice little gift.
Oh.
And it was very easy to make, I must say.
Will you try that again? Coffee butter?
I probably will do that one again, only I won't grind the coffee so fine. I mean, really leave it in big chunks, okay?
See, one thing you learn when you listen to this show, we learn a lot from our mistakes.
Oh, yeah. How to make it up as you go along.
Yes.
Yeah.
And how to respond. How to add more gelatin. How to use less salt or use less sugar. How to grind your coffee a little less.
You know, I've always firmly maintained that someone who is regarded as either a good cook or a good chef is actually the person who knows how to fix the mistakes.
Ah.
Because food, even if you have a set recipe, you know, the ingredients can change. A pea is not always a pea. A beet is different from another beet. A potato is what variety, you know? And so things are different, and you have to pay attention as you go along and kind of bend with the process, as it were.
kind of know the and know your process too. Be aware of
it. Be bold and go there.
Go where no cook has gone before,
exactly.
Like the Cassini space probe. Yes, sirree.
Exactly.
Okay.
Exactly. Well, now there's one more product that's coming up.
Oh, what?
Rhubarb.
Oh, talk rhubarb.
Rhubarb. I did one quick thing this week. I did make a rhubarb relish. So it was really simple. I cooked the rhubarb, and into the rhubarb I threw a jar of orange marmalade. Instead of putting sugar in it, I put the orange marmalade in. And then I wanted it a little pickled. So I put a little bit of vinegar and some hot peppers. And I put in the end of your hot pepper jelly in it, too. So I wanted it kind of like a little pickled relish. Not too. And here's what it was good for. I took a piece of toast, the whole grain toast. I spread a little of the rhubarb-y. It wasn't as vinegar as, say, a ketchup. Mm-hmm. You know, it was still sweet sour. And then on top of the rhubarb relish, we'll call it, mm-hmm. I laid some smoked salmon. It was good.
It was really good. See? And when you realize that you can kind of bend the rules and kind of go with the flow.
And that was a quick recipe, too.
Yes.
That did not take much time.
And use what's in your refrigerator.
Yeah, I had that jar of orange marmalade sitting there. And when I first opened it, I went, this is too sweet. I didn't really like it. So it sat there and it sat there and it sat there. And then all of a sudden I realized, Lana makes it. One of my favorite jellies that you make is your rhubarb orange, which inspired me to make that combination.
Rhubarb and orange together. Mm-hmm. It's a good thing. Yes, it is.
So happy rhubarb, everybody. It's coming on. Now, let's talk about the farmer's market.
Okay. Farmer's market, it's starting all over, but downtown in Ames, this coming Saturday, I believe at 8 o'clock in the morning, there will be farmers showing up with trucks, and they will unload all their finest this time of year. And the Ames Downtown Farmers Market is going to have a kind of a special event. They did this last year, and it was quite a success.
Yeah, good turnout last year. So we expect the same thing because the weather is going to cooperate.
Right, and they are going to feature food trucks. They did this last year, and people seem to really enjoy it.
So come on down for breakfast and or lunch.
Come on down and nibble. What could be better? Yes.
Now, do we know, is the North Grand Farmers Market also opening?
I think so.
We don't know, but it's a good guess they are.
Uh-huh.
Sometimes they go to both farmers markets.
Check all your local farmers markets.
And don't forget to ask Lee's Greens if he has the chervil.
Oh, chervil is a good thing to explore. Yes, it is. Yes, it is. You've been listening to the Donna Lana Kitchen. Today we talked about asparagus, mushrooms, onions. Do you feel it? Spring is here. Yes, it is. And I want to take this opportunity to remind you that we get by with your support. And at this moment, we could use $500. Not from one of you, but you could be part of that. Send some cash in and become a member of this fine station and help us meet our goal of $9,000. That'd be good. That would be good. Support this fine radio station. This is community radio. So there's Farmers Market this weekend. There's a concert on Sunday at the library from 2 to 4, a concert by the Barnumble Band. Yes, yes, you could listen to that. Come and tap your toes. You can listen to the Donna Lana Kitchen Tuesdays at noon, 7 p.m. in the evening. My name is Lana Noctigal.
And I'm Donna Prisgintas.
We've had Fine Engineering by Evan Taylor. And again, I want to remind you that becoming a member of this fine radio station is a good thing to do. With the world as it is, local community radio is worth supporting, and we appreciate your support. And also, let us know if you've got some Russian tarragon. Yes, yes. Happy spring! Eat good food and enjoy life!
It's better than you think. Enjoy yourself while you're still in the pink. Oh, those years go by as quickly as a wink. Enjoy yourself, enjoy yourself. It's later than you think. Yeah.
making dough. You say someday you'll have your fun, and you're a millionaire. Imagine all the fun you'll have from your old rocking chair. I say enjoy yourself, it's later than you think. Enjoy yourself while you're still in the penny. Golden years go by as quickly as the wind. Enjoy yourself, it's later than you think. Yeah. Take that ocean trip, no matter how